Now more than ever. Lowe's knows you don't just want a low price. You want the lowest price. And with our lowest price guarantee, you can count on us for competitive prices on all your home improvement projects. If you find a qualifying lower price somewhere else on the same item, we'll match it. Lowe's. We help. You save. Price match applies to same item, current price at qualifying retailers. Exclusions and terms apply. Learn how we'll match price at Lowe's.com/lowest price guarantee. 4th of July deals are on at Lowe's. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances, including the Samsung Bespoke French Door Refrigerator, featuring beverage center and dual ice maker. Plus, when you buy more, you save more. Now's the perfect time to upgrade your home with top Samsung appliances and hot 4th of July savings at Lowe's. Valid through 7/9. See Lowe's.com for details. Savings vary based on purchase amount. Selection varies by location.
Hello and welcome to the Bulwark Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Miller. We're bringing in the big guns this week. It's Tom Nichols is back, professor emeritus at the Naval War College. He's a staff writer at The Atlantic, author of the Atlantic Daily Newsletter. His books include The Death of Expertise, which has an updated edition. What's up, brother? Thanks for being back on the pod.
Hey, Tim. Thanks for having me. Good to be back, man.
Isaac Arnsdorf, a reporter who was on with us a couple months ago, has some audio from J.D. Vance. It's, you know, maybe a little inconvenient. Maybe Mr. Trump might be mad at him again.
Isn't there always some audio from J.D. Vance that's a little inconvenient?
We could do a whole podcast of it. But today I'm just going to pick this one. Let's take a listen. This was Caitlin Collins playing the audio last night on CNN.
All of us were hit with a little bit of a political sucker punch. The bad news is that Kamala Harris does not have the same baggage as Joe Biden because whatever we might say, Kamala Harris is a lot younger. And Kamala Harris is obviously not struggling in the same ways that Joe Biden did.
Candid comments there, and they may just be an accurate assessment of how much Biden dropping out of the race has shaken things up, truly. But compare what you heard from Senator Vance there to what former President Donald Trump said publicly just a few moments ago on Fox.
Ooh. I think she's a worse candidate than him. Mm. She's far more radical left. She is younger. I mean, she's 60 years old. A lot of people, I didn't realize she was 60. I thought she was a little younger.
Wait for the payoff there. Got to judge her looks, right? We got to include a judgment of Kamala Harris's looks at the end. So
I'm surprised it didn't include disaster. It's a disaster.
Clearly, JD's right. I mean, when we last got together, I just looked. It was July 1st. Donald Trump's ear was fully together. All the cartilage was in there. And Joe Biden was the candidate. So biggest picture, how do you feel? Obviously, you think you concur with JD there.
And, you know, in 2020, I was not a huge Kamala fan. I didn't like the debate. I thought she wasn't great when she was, you know, kind of off the cuff. I think she's gotten better. She seems more disciplined. But the bigger picture is this. A 60-year-old former prosecutor, big state attorney general, with several years' experience in the U.S. Senate and four as vice president. Sign me up. I'll take it. Even if this were not the kind of election it is, you'd say, look, that's a completely credible resume for a presidential candidate, but it is the kind of election it is. So compared to a, you know, unhinged, delusional sociopath, she seems especially good. I mean, what Vance had there, I mean, is this where we do the Washington thing and talk about a perfect Kinsleyan gaffe?
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I accidentally blurted out the truth. You know, what do I do now? I mean, Trump's just being Trump. You know, he's going to say that stuff. And you can almost see the hands going when he does it. Yeah. If you'd have asked me 2 years ago, well, I did write 2 years ago. I said, you know, leave Biden alone. He's doing fine. He's okay. You know, a little slower than he used to be. And I didn't think Harris would be a strong enough candidate. I've been surprised by two things. One is, as I said, how much Harris improved, but also how quickly the Democrats, finally, at least most Democrats seem to be taking this really seriously and saying, look, we have a candidate. We have to coalesce around her. We have to get this thing done. I didn't expect that either.
Trump's just got to be so bitter at JD and Don Jr. right now. It's just like every day there's a new thing. He's going to be like, how did I pick this jabroni?
What did he think was going to happen?
I think he thought these people would be excited. In another clip, I should have pulled it. Another clip from that Laura Ingraham interview. I'll put it in the show notes. She asked him, about this, about the Vance pick and whether there's some issues. And he gives this long kind of rambling answer about how, like, the people with families, with big families, they like him. You know, Laura, there are people out there with big that like him. They like him. It's like these tech guys. And then also these people with huge families. And maybe not, they're not like 400 kids, not the weird families, but like kind of just normal big families. And it's like a man who was told by his son that, you know, he's got to pick this guy because, you know, he's really hot among the youth and he's really hot among the Christians, like two groups that he knows nothing about. And he just kind of assumed that was going to work for him. And it's not really maybe paying off.
It was a very online pick.
Yeah.
You know, one of the ways I think Biden beat the field in 2020 and then beat Trump was that he basically ignored social media. And he ignored the whole online left. And, you know, and it was really interesting primary, right? Because, you know, people like Warren and Sanders were like, you could tell, just like pulling policy off of Twitter. This was the mistake of not ignoring the online world. I think also it was hubris, right? We've got this in the bag. It's done.
Yes.
We could pick Bolsonaro at this point and we could get away with it. And so they said, wouldn't it just totally deliciously own the libs if we picked this, you know, annoying guy who's not even liked in his own state, who has all of these, you know, baggage, has all this baggage. But I keep saying this, and I think you'd probably agree with this, Tim. The other reason he chose Vance, and people need to always grasp this part of Trump. Vance humiliated himself more than anyone to get this job. And that's saying something in this crowd of contenders, right? Where you had Stefanik and Ramaswamy and, you know, really some amazing suck-ups, you know, vying for this post. But Vance was the one who had to explicitly repudiate things he had said out loud and explicitly repudiate things he had written. And I think for Trump, that's a security blanket. Yes. That made him feel good to say, this guy, you know, I knew Mike Pence. Mike Pence was a friend of mine. You're no Mike Pence. You're not going to do this to me. You will do whatever I tell you. Exactly. And and so the fact that Vance was willing to just, you know, burn every last principle he had to the ground probably put him over the top. Who would have been a smarter pick in a tighter race? Maybe somebody reassuring like Burgum, right?
I thought Marco would have been better. I mean, I hate Marco. So like, I feel like I can give this as a totally analytical response. I do not care for Marco Rubio at all in any way, but he can give a good speech. He would have been totally fine on the debate stage. He has sucked up to Trump in ways that are extremely pathetic, but not nearly in the category of Vance as far as submission. And, you know, he's a politician. He's run for president. He's been through the traps. He was a much better pick, I think, clearly.
Yeah. I suppose you could argue, too, he brings, you know, that
it's not two white guys.
Right. He sort of drives that wedge harder into the Hispanic vote and all of that. I mean, I think a safer pick, maybe. And, you know, but there were other Republicans out there who could have been what Vance was, which is like, don't worry, there's somebody, you know, calm and reassuring. And he didn't want that. He wanted a shit poster, and he got one.
Boy, did he get one. And he's getting it good and hard right on the couch. Speaking of, you mentioned the joke.
Don't do the couch jokes. And you know how I am about that.
What are you talking? I don't know what you're talking about.
I've been totally telling people not to do that because it's a faked thing. And, you know, there's so much real stuff to go after with him that you don't need to go there. So that's my, I don't know if anybody can see me, but I'm wagging a finger.
In case anybody is listening. Yeah. In case anyone's listening to the Blur Podcast or watching us on YouTube, I don't want to spread disinformation. J.D. Vance, as far as we know, there's no evidence that he ever made sweet, sweet love to a sectional or a couch of any kind. There's no evidence of it. That's a rumor, and we'll just leave it at that. It's like the old LBJ. I'm going to be the one that does the old time stuff where he tells the advisor to spread the rumor that his opponent's a pig fucker. Yeah. It's like nobody's going to believe that he's a pig fucker. It's like, well, let him deny it. So
I just want to hear the son of a bitch deny it.
There you go. There you go. One other thing you said in there that sparked a thought that I wanted to get to was about how Biden avoided the online left and was able to kind of campaign towards the middle. And I've been interested this week. The dynamic is different clearly. Kamala is very online, not online in the way that JD is. She's not like personally reading weirdo far-right web blogs like Modius Mole Blog or whatever. She's not that kind of weirdo. But like the campaign is very online. The Kamala HQ Twitter account has a meme for a pop artist, right? So it's not your daddy's campaign anymore. It's not Joe Biden's campaign anymore. But the excitement from the left in the base, I feel like, has given her a little bit of freedom to not have to pander to them. And the latest example of this is here from the New York Times. In addition to changing her position on fracking, campaign officials said Harris now backed the Biden administration's budget request for increased funding for border enforcement, no longer supported a single-payer health insurance program, and echoed Biden's call for banning assault weapons, but not a requirement to sell them back to the federal government. You know, moving to the middle, moving on over. This feels like somebody that's in it to win it to me.
I'm sorry, but you know, it feels like that the normal rules of politics are reasserting themselves. Run to the edge in a primary, yeah, run right to the center in the general. Hello. Isn't that what every smart campaign has done for, you know, 60 years? And I think also because Biden didn't have an innate credibility with the left, they always came after him. Right. That, you know, Biden's just a Republican light and we remember Anita Hill and we remember this and that. And, you know, I mean, it's effective with business to say I'm from Delaware where all of you are incorporated. Sure. That doesn't really, you know, fly with the left. But I think, too, you know, being a little younger and being able to kind of, as you say, I won't say ignore the left, but to say, look, I get you. I understand you. We've, you know, we understand each other, but we're not doing that today. But also to have a kind of a hipper sensibility about how to phrase things to normal people. Look, when I was a Republican, I used to love Joe Biden because he was the definition of a Kinsley and Gaffe.
Right.
Like when I worked in the Senate, you know, or when I was working in politics and living in D.C., of course you would watch the Sunday shows because Joe Biden was going to blurt out something true and it was going to be interesting. But I think that's not how you run a campaign in the 21st century. For example, her decision to just go with this very simple declaration, something I've been saying for years, that the guy's just weird, you know, like not a normal person, not like you and me. I think where she's really gotten away from the online left is not in terms of campaigning, but in terms of, no, we don't have to go through Twitter and check the box of all these policy positions that we have to make sure that our left flank is covered on. I keep going back to 2020 and campaigns like Warren and Sanders and others. It was like,
we're going to decriminalize the border. Raise your hand. I mean, it's just like, come on.
Right, right. I've got a white paper on that. Yeah. Right. I think, you know, some simple themes. He's not a normal guy. I'm a prosecutor. He's a felon. It feels like somebody there has kind of learned their lesson, which also surprises me because I will be churlish and probably get some flack. But when she ran in 2020 and those first few years as vice president, I was not exactly impressed with what seemed to be the staffing there.
No, she went through had a lot of staff overhaul. It's been something I've wanted, maybe later this week or next week, I'm going to do a kind of broader conversation about that. Because I think it's worth being eyes wide open. JVL had a good newsletter yesterday. Kamala Harris is not, you know, this is not pop music. She's not Beyonce. She's not a slay queen. She's not going to be perfect. She's a human, right? And she's going to have strengths and flaws. She's going to have policy proposals that we agree with, that you don't agree with. And one of the things that it's kind of at least worth being eyes open about is that she did have a ton of staffing turnover, a kind of an unusual amount that makes you wonder, okay, what was happening there? And maybe it's just something as simple as she's finding her sea legs. I hope it's that, like finding people she trusts, finding her sea legs. It was rocky. She was on rocky turf in a primary trying to figure out, how do I deal with Warren and Sanders to the left of me and this young mayor Pete over here, like talking circles around everybody to the right, and old man Joe Biden talking circles or to the right of me, like, where's my lane here? And so I think she was a little bit unsteady. And then the vice presidency is just by nature an unsteady job. You're like, I have no real job. Okay. And I've got to like present myself. So I'm hoping that it's just more of kind of finding a role, you know, that she's really well suited to. And I think she is well suited to this. Just one more thing on the policy. I've been getting a kick out of the fact you can tell her power right now and her strength in this political moment by, there's not that I've seen, maybe it's out there, there's been very little pushback to her from the left. It's not like you've seen AOC spouting off about how she's abandoned some of these left wing positions. And we've seen many of our friends, the anti-Trumpers, the Wall Street Journal crowd, the National Review crowd, being like, oh, you're just going to allow her to flip flop on all these issues. And I'm like, yeah, great. She's flip flopping to the middle. That's great. The VP on your ticket thought that the P was Hitler 8 years ago. All right. So like a little flip flop on fracking is just fine with me. All right. So anyway,
as the punchline to an old beer commercial went, you're going to let her do? Yes, I am. Some of our comrades, you know, on the right. I mean, I was talking to Jonah Goldberg on a pod a while back, and he's like, look, I get it about being never Trump, but why do you have to be a cheap date?
Yeah.
And accept these policy positions? I'm like, well, if you start from sedition is bad, okay, then, you know, the other, then I know how to argue about tax rates and fracking and you know, stuff like that. Those are normal conversations we can have. I don't know how to argue with people who say the parts of the Constitution I don't like should be covered over in whiteout. You know, yeah, I'm where you are. It's like somebody jumped on me on speaking of social media. I said, look, she's fine. She's going to do things I won't like. And someone said, see, you never Trumpers. You always have to slip that in. You know, I'm like, every president's going to do things you don't like. I mean, she's a liberal senator. You know, if she wins, she's going to be a Democratic president. Of course, she's going to do things I don't like, but she's not going to try and overthrow the Constitution of the United States. And, you know, as long as that's where we are, I'm good. I can deal with the other stuff.
I want to shout out Charlie on this point. Charlie Sykes in The Atlantic has a piece out yesterday, I believe, that said the never Trumpers are clear on their goal. At the core of Mark Thiessen over at the Washington Post, his argument is the perception that Harris poses an impossible dilemma for never Trump conservatives. On paper, Thiessen might have once had a point. Before Trump, the ideological divide between Harris and conservative Republicans might have been too large to bridge. But this is not a normal campaign. For most never Trump Republicans, the 2024 election is not primarily about the divide between left and right. It's about preserving our liberal constitutional order.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. And so if we're going to get on a little cherry on top of that, that she's going to pivot to the center. Okay.
Well, and I was going to say the ideological distance between Kamala Harris 4 years ago.
That's a good point.
And conservatives was bigger than it is now. But of course, Thiessen, I mean, this is such a bad faith argument, right? It's like, well, yes, I'm against Trump too, but I can't vote for anybody who might run against Trump ever.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's like, well, then what does that even mean? You know?
Okay, what is the point of view? Why do you have a column?
What is the point, right? Everybody's bad.
If you can't propose a solution, what is the point of your newspaper column?
I wrote a piece about a month ago because this always just pisses me off immensely. And I called it the Jimmy Clean Hands election, you know, after a character in Once Upon a Time in America, a union boss who was James Conway O'Donnell. And they called him Jimmy Clean Hands because he was an idealistic young socialist who wanted no part of any of these dirty dealings in the 1930s, except, of course, whenever the mob was helping him fight the police and help them, you know, with their strikes and stuff. So he was up to his ass in mob stuff, but he always maintained a distance. And so they called him Jimmy Clean Hands.
I love that you make me feel young with these references that I have no idea what you're talking about. It's just
a 1984 Sergio Leone classic with Robert De Niro in it, my friend. You must.
I'm Benjamin Buttoning just listening to you talk about this. Go ahead.
You've got to. If I were talking about Casablanca, would you think I was 90? Come on. It's a classic. Would. I know. Yeah.
Tim Walz quoted, just really quick, Tim Walz quoted Little Rascals the other day. I stole his line, not realizing it was referencing something. And everybody in the comment section is like, Tim, have you not seen Little Rascals? I was like, I might have saw it once.
Oh, when I was a kid. Tim Walz really quoted Little Rascals.
He did. Okay. He called the He Man Woman Haters Club.
Okay, but that's a classic. I get it. Okay. Anyway, moving on about my age, you know, and all these guys are Jimmy Clean Hands. Well, I am totally against Trump. Well, what are you going to do to stop? Well, nothing. I'm going to leave that to you. And if he wins, it's not my fault, but I'll be okay with that. And I think that's the undertone of a lot of these comments. And I think that's another thing Harris is going to have to deal with people saying, well, you know, I would have voted for Joe Biden. You're going to get a lot of that now from people who would never have voted for Joe Biden. I would have voted for Biden, but Harris, that's just a bridge too far.
Get ready for July 4th with early savings at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. These deals are coming in hot.
Lowe's. We help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on South High Street in Columbus.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
Since we're right on this subject, I want to get to just kind of how you respond to the ads that are happening right now that kind of frame up this conversation that we're talking about how the two campaigns are going to reach out to the people that are trying to have Jimmy clean hands on this. So I just want to play for you. The Trump campaign is on TV right now, $12 million playing in a lot of the swing states with this ad. I want you to listen to it.
I'm Donald J. Trump, and I approve this message.
This is America's border czar, and she's failed us. Under Harris, over 10 million illegally here. A quarter of a million Americans dead from fentanyl. Brutal migrant crimes. And ISIS now here.
Do you have any plans to visit the border? You haven't been to the border.
And I haven't been to Europe. I mean, I don't understand the point that you're making.
Kamala Harris, failed, weak, dangerously liberal.
That's from her Lester Holt interview in that first year where she was kind of struggling in the VP spot. What do you make of that? I mean, I think that is really where, when you separate all the bullshit, it's like, she's a California liberal. She's a California liberal. What do you mean? She wants open borders. She wants migrants to come through and rape people. I mean, that's basically what it comes down to, right?
And she wants her kids to be gay.
Yeah.
And
does she got to go at that immigration thing head on, though? Or is that a sunk cost? Where are you at on that?
Going at it head on. I mean, there's always the problem that with immigration, people say it's their top issue. And then they come out, you know this from exit polls, right? They come out and it turns out to be like eighth.
Yeah.
But it's something that fires people up because it pings all kinds of racial anxieties and demographic concerns. I mean, it's really notable how much you get a lot of anxiety about immigrants in places like, you know, Iowa and northern New Hampshire.
So I got in trouble because I was on the Next Level podcast last week and I was like, are we really going to lose the democracy because people in Wisconsin and Michigan and Pennsylvania are so worried about the border? And people are chastising me, letting me know that, yes, people there are worried about the border. I guess, okay, that's fine. I'm not saying the border's not a problem, but, you know, given the battlefield here, you know, what about the Canadian border? Fentanyl could come across the Canadian border, too. It's not like these ads make it seem like fentanyl's being run by mules under the Rio Grande. It's like fentanyl is very easy to transport. Like, it comes in through airports, through ports. It could come in through in somebody's car trunk through Toronto. Like, it's not like it's just these scary Guatemalans that are bringing fentanyl across.
First of all, fentanyl, or as Republicans like to call it, fentanyl.
I just did that, so that thing, I struggle with that one too. Thank you for correcting me. It's important to get things right.
Fentanyl. I know. You know what a pedant I am.
I do. I appreciate that about you.
But the problem is that even to make that argument like you just did, right, where you say, look, fentanyl comes in a lot of legal places. You know, people put it in car trunks. I could bring it from, you know, Toronto. Then you look like you're minimizing it. Then you look like you're not taking it seriously. I think you have to take it seriously, but I think you don't have to take the bait. And I think one thing that the Biden people were less good at, that the Harris people seem better at, and I'm saying that very tentatively because it's so early, was that the Biden folks would say, well, we've been accused of, you know, this on the border. Well, here's our ad that says, you know, 1, 2, 3,
here's
4.
The facts.
Here's the facts, right. And, you know, they come out and they say this about Harris, and she goes, man, you guys are just strange. And to go back to the masculinity thing, I mean, ads like that, they're pretty common in politics for a long time. I mean, by the way, J.D. Vance ran in Ohio saying one of the top three priorities for people of Ohio is closing the southern border. Like, of Ohio? Really? Yeah. Like, got to stop
Kentucky.
That, you know, Kentucky. Yeah, you know, you got issues. There is a way in which the Democrats and the Republicans, I mean, back 40-odd years ago, to me, the Republicans were the quiet technocrats. The guys in suits who kind of knew what they were doing and sort of just did it. You know, they just weren't real excitable. I mean, I grew up around Massachusetts liberals. I grew up in, you know, Western Mass, which was my hometown area. It was kind of evenly divided. There was kind of the lunch pail conservatives, the working class Tory sort of thing. But a lot of, it was also like five colleges and kids chaining themselves to Air Force gates and all that crap. And so, you know, to me, that was a kind of a cool thing. Like, if you're an intelligent, reasoning person, you went with, of course, remember, I was in New England, so I wasn't seeing, you know, the evangelical rise down in the South and all that stuff.
Right.
But they seem to have changed places where Republicans have become drama queens about everything. I mean, everything is turned up to 11, and it's very screechy and freaky and kind of just over the top hyperventilating. And who's Harris trying to pick from for vice president? Like, well, Cooper's out now, but Shapiro and Waltz and Kelly and all these really sort of calm, plodding, you know, again, kind of technocratic.
A person that you could just see kind of in charge of any like mid-level right. business, you know, company or whatever, you know, just like a type of person that you'd see, you know, in the airport lounge
on his laptop,
on the laptop
solving something,
solving a problem, right? Like just
right.
regular people.
I think it's important to highlight that change because the undecided voters and I think really the broad mass of Americans, they're exhausted by this.
I think it's even more dramatic than that. You're in your article, The Great Manliness Flip-Flop. This was my favorite part. The strong, silent types were venerated. The heroes included cops, soldiers, cowboys. Republicans admired the actors that played these role models, including Clint Eastwood, Robert Mitchum, John Wayne, and yet, yes, Ronald Reagan.
All Republicans, by the way.
Yeah. That strong, silent type. What did ever happen to that? Like, that used to be the paragon of manhood. And now manhood, if you go to the Republican convention, which everybody said was so manly, so focused, that was the common pundit talking point. They were so focused on machismo. The last day was like a wrestling actor complaining about things. Tucker Carlson in his little penny loafers complaining about things. Donald Trump with his grievance. Obviously, it's a legitimate grievance when it comes to the assassination story. But even still, it was very melodramatic. The whole thing was, I would describe it as campy. Like, it was very campy. Yeah. They were all beset by hurt feelings. The media is mean to me. The judges are mean to me. The rules are unfair. Everything's unfair. Like, what? Buck the fuck up.
Yeah, it is really whiny. And I don't say this as a matter of politics. I mean, just as a late middle-aged guy, it's just cringy, you know? It's like, come on. Like you say, you know, just, Jesus Christ, have some dignity. I have argued a lot online with bullet truthers. I've said, hey, if somebody shot at me and all it did was make my ear bleed and, you know, zing past my ear and burn it or put a little piece of, you know, a fragment of a bullet or something, you know, my wife would not be saying, well, it's okay, Tom wasn't really shot.
Right.
My wife would be like flipped out and she wouldn't let me out of the house.
And granted, in that moment, I've said this a million times, in that moment, like, it was crazy that he had the wherewithal to want to stand up and raise his fist and... Yeah, so sure. So that's not the part we're talking about when it talks about the tough guy. It's all the whining that happens surrounding that about how the people on his stories are mean to him.
Well, that's the thing, right? And you compare that in the piece, I compare it with Reagan, who really does have to get a bullet dug out. I mean, it took a long time, like years, before people realized that Reagan came within a whisker of dying on the table because Kinkley got him and lodged a bullet in him. And Reagan, in his first appearance, and credit to Karen Tumulty for digging this up at the time, Reagan goes and he stands for Congress and he talks for three paragraphs and he pays tribute to the cops and the Secret Service guy that got hit, talks about James Brady, thanks his doctors, tells a cute story about a little kid who sent him a card saying he might, if he doesn't rest enough, he might have to go to work in his pajamas. And then he says, now, let's talk about the economy and inflation. You know, that is a very stoic thing. You don't even have to call it manly. It's a very stoic thing to do.
But stoic was a manly virtue.
Right. I'm sitting here, as you can see behind me, I have the greatest American stoic on my bookshelf here, President Washington.
We have Ryan Holiday. I did an interview with him. It does a whole thing on the stoics and the manly virtues.
Oh, yeah. Ryan's
written some, right? Yeah,
yep, and like he's all written that great stuff.
Being a rock, being solid for people. you know, being reliable.
And you don't have to share every thought that goes through your head.
Yeah.
And he just wallowed in it. And I think, you know, you ask, where did it go? I think some of that was going because the role models who encouraged it were leaving public life. But also Donald Trump really made it okay. When I wrote a piece some years ago called The Most Unmanly President, I didn't go after Trump because I'm not some paragon of masculinity. I mean, you know, you,
same.
Sarah Longwell has always, you know, joshed me about when I brought up that, you know, I use foo-foo hair products and skin stuff and that my shaving cream is from London and yet.
I got no blisters on these hands. Right. That's not okay. Very soft hands.
I just had a manicure. You know, it's not like I'm, you know, Marshall Dillon over here. What I was writing about was why do the working class white men who prize that sort of masculinity, why are they not repelled by a guy they would normally hate?
Right.
And that, I think, is the mystery. And I think it's because the deal is, as long as he hates the same people, which is always part of that deal,
yeah,
as long as he kind of triggers people they don't like, but also Trump is the get out of jail free card for bad behavior.
Yeah.
When I wrote that piece, I was still working for the government, and so people were leaving messages at my workplace. And a veteran called, and he was railing. You were never in the military. What unit were you in? How, you know, what have you ever done? And I'm listening and saying, you're talking about a guy who went to a military high school.
Did you meant this message for me or for Donald Trump?
I was just going to say,
machine is supposed to be
holy
on.
Crap, man. You know, this guy was hated at the military academy for being like a cheating weasel. You know, you look at the stories of the people that went to Valley Forge with him. And in that sense, I guess I just don't understand it, except that they believe they should adhere to those manly standards. But Trump, because he's Loki and he's this chaos agent, he's like their rascally son that they love, even though they're constantly bailing him out of jail or something.
Yeah, I don't know. It's funny. It's a be careful what you wish for situation for me, you know, because I'm in my feelings. I did not aspire to be the Clint Eastwood type, the strong, silent type. That was never going to be me. I'm my mother. Internally, I had some, like, I don't know if I was maybe turned off by that type a little bit, or there's something about it that bugged me. And like now here I am with a little bit more wisdom and a few grays. And I'm thinking, boy, I really wish we had more Clint Eastwood types, or wish we had more John Waynes around. It's like, when I meant being in touch with your feelings, I meant like having empathy, caring about others, not like whining and being so mad and being so angry at everybody and having temper tantrums at the world. It's just like, shut the fuck up.
When an American military officer was shot running around in Berlin back in the days when we used to shoot at each other in Berlin, because it was a pretty tense place. Reagan was, you know, visibly angry, and some reporters, so what do you, he gave like the standard speech, right? We deplore this, yada, yada, yada. So what do you really think, Mr. President? And Reagan kind of looked at him and he said, you don't want to know what I'm thinking. Compare that to somebody like Trump, who's like, please stop talking. You know, please just stop talking. My God, you know, just, it's okay to have an unexpressed thought. I think the reason some of that has gone away is, let's be honest, you didn't particularly like that type of man because it does verge over into dysfunction, right?
Sure.
I always love that line from Midnight Run for my fam out there who loves Midnight Run as much as I do. When Charles Grodin turns to Robert De Niro in that movie, De Niro being the strong and silent type in that movie, he says, you know what your problem is? You have two forms of expression, silence and rage. So, you know, you don't want to be that guy.
Yeah,
but, you know, I'm like you, Tim. Silence, as John Adams said of George Washington, he had the gift of silence. As you can tell, no one's ever given me that gift. Mm-mm. But I admire it. And I admire it in the men who have it. You know, and I don't know how it became okay to be, you know, this whiny, blinged out daytime TV addict, you know, who's constantly belly aching about how nobody really, you know, nobody likes me. It must be my personality. And everybody's after Trump. And he made that okay. He made that okay for a lot of men who don't want to grow up. And I think, and I'll just stop the dime store anthropology here, but I think some of it is, it was very appealing in a culture where a lot of men have refused to grow up. and become adults. If you're an arrested adolescent, yeah. You know, there's an interesting parallel here. I said I'd stop. I'll do two more seconds. It's an interesting parallel.
I love talking about Trump and his makeup and how he's an arrested adolescent. We can do the rest of the show on this, so please continue.
Well, compare him to his friend Howard Stern, right?
Yeah.
Stern was the worst case of aspirational, and I didn't coin this phrase, but I heard it once, aspirational assholery. Yeah. That if you were a young guy, you said, man, I want to be able to just, you know, be as racist and idiotic and talk about girls and their boobs
dick,
all day
say
long.
Whatever I want.
Just be a total, you know, id walking around. But as Stern got older, you know, even now he talks about Trump and he's like, look, the guy needs therapy.
Yeah.
You know, having children, getting married, experiencing life and death, you know, it's supposed to change you. It's supposed to make you different. And when Howard Stern emerges as a good example of mature masculinity and chastising Donald Trump, you know, for his problems, I mean, it tells you what an interesting place we've come to. But Stern really appealed to kids. You know, I went in the 80s, all my friends were Howard Stern fans because they just love that idea. And I think Trump appeals that same thing. It's like, you can be a dick. You know, it's okay. It's fun. It's more fun than going to work and being good to your kids and, you know, talking to your wife and being conscientious at your job. That's for suckers and for chumps. That's a mug's game. Yeah,
caring about people's feelings. That's for losers.
Only losers do that, right.
Get ready for July 4th with early savings at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on South High Street in Columbus.
Ugh. Spam calls. Sound familiar? Introducing Line 2. Get a second phone number right on your existing phone. Imagine. Discounts. Appointments. Online forms. Handle it all without giving out your personal number. It's like having a secret weapon against spam. And when those unwanted calls sneak through, boom. Blocked. No more interruptions. No more stress. Stay connected. Stay protected. Keep your main number safe and out of harm's way. Ready to take back your phone? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.
Speaking about tough guys, you know, that aren't weird at all. You know, there's JD Vance, Tucker, Little Pump, Little Pimp. Is he Little Pump or Little Pimp? I don't know. The little rapper with all the face tattoos that's out there for Trump. The weird thing is you've been on it for a while. We've been on it for a while. It's hit takeoff velocity. And I think that it's landing. And I want to just talk briefly about why you think it's landing.
Because they are weird. Boy, this will be the first time you and I ever talked about a Tom Friedman piece. But, you know, yesterday in the Times, right, Thomas Friedman said, stop calling them weird. It's silly. It's juvenile. No, the couch gags were silly and juvenile. Calling them weird is a denotation. It's saying something that's right in front of you. I mean, when somebody posted that thing from the, I don't know if it was a CPAC or someplace with Marge Taylor Greene visiting the guy, so we play acting, visiting the guy in prison with a MAGA hat. You know, I'm sorry, you don't issue a point paper in response to that. You turn to all the other normal people in America and you go, look, I know we have our disagreements, but we can all agree, right? That's weird.
We don't want these freaks running the government.
That's just creepy.
Yeah.
Are these the people that you want, like, in charge of making sure that you get your Social Security check, or that, you know, are those the people you want, like, doing procurement at the Air Force? Yeah. People play acting jail scenes at CPAC. It's not that we disagree with their policies, which we do. It's not that we just, you know, wish they were better people, even though we do. It's that they are weird. They are creepy. And it's okay to say that out loud. And I think it gives maybe the expression I'm looking for here is like a permission structure where you can turn to other people and people can say, you know, I always felt like something's off about this. And yeah, it's creepy. It's okay to say it.
Creepy is really on the point. And weird has taken off just because it's more of a catch-all. But really, the point people are making, and I think why it's sticking, is that word. It's creepy. You know, we're not out there saying, hey, you can't have niche interests. You know, you can't be outside the mainstream and be in government. You know, you can't be whatever. You can't collect weird collectibles, like whatever it is that you might think somebody in your life's a little weird about. That's not what this is. It's about, no, these guys are creepy and they're freaks. And they have this like weird obsession with controlling you, mostly women.
Right. They want to impose their creepiness on you.
And it's mostly women that they want to impose their creepiness on. And it's like they need to have thoughts about whether they bear children at the right year. They want to have thoughts about whether they're staying in their marriage appropriately, if their husband is getting lit and slapping them across the face. They want to, you know, talk about whether, you know, the gender norms are correct in the M&Ms, whether the M&M, the green M&M girl should be in flats or high heels. That was a Tucker Carlson segment. Like, it's creepy and we don't like it. And we don't want people with the power of the purse and the power of the law, of the government, who have those creepy obsessions to be at the helm.
And you can turn that back on them, because I think, you know, the Republicans have made their arguments about people, you know, like trans people in the Biden administration, you know, saying, look, they're weird. They're weird. You know, okay, fine, they're weird. You know, if that's how you feel about them. But that added sense of control, it undermines arguments that even people in the center might agree with. And I think, for example, the Republicans have this really strong point, because I think it really pings something deep in a lot of parents to say biological males shouldn't be competing on girls' sports teams, right? That's, they're big on that. And I think, you know, for a lot of parents, they kind of shrug and go, yeah, I think that's probably wrong. But then they have to go that one step further and say, and so we're going to do, like, you know, genitalia inspections. Right. And all of a sudden, you know, right, this sort of,
or actually that's going to be one of the 10 points in our platform. We only have 10 things that we care about. Yeah. And what the gender restrictions are on high school skateboarding tournaments is going to be one of the 10 items. Like, that's fucking weird. That moves into creepy territory.
this conversation that would have been a kind of normal, concerned, empathetic discussion among parents, yeah, about their children and their schools, yeah, turns into this like freaky dystopian weird out, you know, where you're like, yeah, I don't know how I'm going to come out on this issue, and I don't know how we solve it, but I don't want you near my kids.
Yeah, I don't want J.D. Vance doing ball checks at the high school swimming, yeah, meet. Sorry.
And I think that the next stage of this is, you know, there is a difference between weird and creepy. I mean, you know, Vivek Ramaswamy is just weird, right? I mean, you watch, yeah, him and he does that whole Peter Navarro. I always think of him as stealing Peter Navarro's hands when he talks, you know, because he does that thing. But what Vance has verged into is creepy. It's not just unusual or offbeat. I mean, it's creepy, and a creepy authoritarian version of creepiness. You know, like the hero mothers of the fatherland should have more votes, you know, than everybody else. I mean, there's just this kind of weird, because it comes out of all of that weird techno bro stuff about, you know, remaking society the way that people with billions of dollars think it, you know, a bunch of guys who invented an app think it should be remade. It's weird and it's creepy.
Yeah, seasteading. It's a little weird. Want to go live with a bunch of people, a small group of people on the sea. Okay, yeah, that's fine. We'd probably be better off if Peter Thiel and JD had done that instead. We're this far in, Tom. And if we're going to be curmudgeonly, we're 45 minutes in. We got to pick on, you know, the progressives a little bit. There have been these calls this week, these Zoom calls. At first, I thought it was great. It's like, hey, it's Black women for Kamala, and people are super excited. Then it's like, oh, it's Black men for Kamala. Like, we're going to take the poll. It's like, okay, cool. And then it was white ladies for Kamala. And the call was like a little, had some weird, like some ladies speaking in baby talk on it. And then it was white dudes for Kamala. And then I got to this place where I was like, this feels like a scene from the movie Get Out. It's identity politics is going awry. It makes me feel the most non-progressive of anything that's happened recently. I just don't know how a meeting of white guys is a good idea. If Stephen Miller hosted a Whites for Trump Zoom call, my colleagues at MSNBC would be like rocketing into the sun with rage, rightly. And so I think we should stop. I think we should stop having segregated meetings.
Let's do racial affinity groups. What could go wrong?
This is weird, right? So if we're calling them weird, like maybe let's not do weird things like
exactly.
White dudes call
if
Zooms.
Part of your campaign is to point out that the other guys are being weird, then it's very important not to be weird. Now, again, it's a more, let us say something nice here, which is it's a kind of harmless form of weirdness.
Sure.
You know, their intentions are good.
The intentions
it's not,
are
you know,
fine. Yeah,
white
the intentions
dudes
are good.
For increasing the racial birth rate kind of stuff. Right. But it is weird. I mean, it's just, I mean, I grew up in politics doing ethnic affinity stuff, right? Like in where I grew up, you check to find out how many people in your district were Irish, how many were Polish, how many were this, how many were that.
Italians for Heinz or whatever.
Yeah, right. You know, I mean, my first boss in politics was Polish. 1980 census came out. We opened up the census and said, we're golden. You know, we're fat. So that's a reality of politics. But white dudes for Kamala, you know, I was like, why? Why do we feel the need to say this? The whole point of this is not that she's going, the way her campaign, I think, reaches out is to say, we're not doing that. It's just everybody who's on this, everybody who's not with Trump is welcome on this side of the fence. You know, I mean, you know this, the Republicans for a long time, when the Democrats lurched to the left and went off the cliff after the 70s, in a way, the Republican coalition became unwieldy because it was the party of everybody else.
Right.
Right. The Democrats were like a club that you had to be a card-carrying member of. And the Republicans were just this like default party of everybody else. And I think Democrats don't really understand that. They don't understand that that was key to part of what Reagan was doing, saying you don't have to be a Republican. You just have to not like what the Democrats are doing.
Yeah.
And so come on over here. You know, Harris has started her campaign pretty much saying, if you're not that, then by definition, you're over here with us. And doing, you know, white dudes and, you know, suburban moms and, but it just, to me, it's not necessary.
Yeah. If you want to have a little group and get excited together, bros for Kamala, whatever, you know, people who are into knitting for Kamala, musical fans for Kamala, whatever you want to do, make a t-shirt. I'm cool with that. Clubs are cool, but
white dudes
let's just not create whites only affinity groups. That's it. I think that's a simple ask. And
well, and also without the bro talk.
Yeah.
You know,
we don't need it.
I mean, if you want to say, you know, suburban middle-aged accountants.
Great.
You know,
have a group.
Fine.
Have a Facebook group.
Have a
text chain together. It's all good. Raise money for, find ways, find creative ways to raise money for. I'm for it, but I don't know. The baby talk about how white people are bad at a whites only meeting is just, let's just not do it.
I didn't see that. Did that
happen? It really happened. That happened on the ladies' version of the call. It happened. How we need to keep our ears open. We do need to keep our ears open. It's just like, have that convo, you know, on campus. You can have, you know, in the dorms, hash it all out. But it's a presidential campaign. We want everybody in. The Obama 04 ethos. I keep complimenting Obama lately, and just it's this the nature of ways. The Obama 04 ethos is what we're going for here.
Well, it sounds to me like a lot of these were practically the $5,000 a plate dinner for us to tell you that you're a racist. Hard pass on that. Just keep it open for every
friendly advice.
Big tent.
I'm not even with Tom on the bros thing. If you want to have a bros call, a racially diverse bros call for Kamala, I'm fine with that. Okay, last thing, while people are mad at me, because I won't give it up. I think you wrote an article about this, or maybe I just saw it on Twitter, complimenting Joe Biden's speech, Oval Office address, about stepping aside. I did not share that view. I'm still mad at him. I can't. I'm sorry. I know that makes some people upset. I'm still mad at him.
You're a hater, man.
He was leading us into the abyss. And if it wasn't for the fact that his campaign team was just mind-bogglingly incompetent in determining that they should have a debate in June, had they not made that mistake, like we would literally be on Trulia right now looking for houses in Uruguay. But we're not. That's great. It worked out by accident, kind of. And we're here. I'm excited about that, but I'm a little mad at him. But you are not. You think that, you know, we should honor him. And I want to hear that perspective. So please share.
Okay. First of all, I understand being a stubborn old Irish guy. Okay.
Are you saying I'm a stubborn middle-aged Irish guy for still hating him?
Or, I'm just saying, you know,
that maybe always, me and Joe, maybe this is a me and Joe have something in common and that there's that tension is still there.
People always think of me as Greek, but most of my background, most of my genetic makeup is right from the old country, County Kerry. And so obnoxious, stubborn old Irish guy that can't take advice immediately is somebody I feel like I can understand. I think that he got to that decision at all is something, because I think there are people who would have said, I don't care if I lose. Stepping aside after I've gotten all the delegates, you can kiss my bony Irish ass. And then, you know, he just wasn't going to do it. I think I will share a little bit of your anger here, Tim, because when he gave that farewell message, he struggled with it. And I said, this farewell message of all things is one more thumb on the scale that says he couldn't do a campaign. He wasn't going to be able to take this case forward. I still think he can run the country because, you know, you sit in a, people don't understand that you don't have big, giant thunder domes to develop policy, right? The president sits down, he's got his aides. There's a lot of delegating. There's a lot of deliberation. There's a lot of executive function that goes on. I'm perfectly fine with him being president. I mean, I think, frankly, I would have been fine with him being president, you know, until the day he died. But that proved to me that he couldn't do it, and that he knew he couldn't do it. He should have known it earlier. And the people around him especially should have, you know, been, I mean, you want to know what I'm really mad about? Every story I saw where they said, well, he was in a meeting with Jill and Hunter. And I'm like, no, sorry. I wrote a whole piece defending his relationship with his son. I talked about my own father. I understand, you know, the love of a son and a father, not in the White House. Sorry. You want to meet with Hunter? You want to get some advice? Fly out to Wilmington.
You were supposed to be doing the ode to Biden here. I've already done the shitting.
I know, but I'm seeing. But now, look, you spin me up. You never know what gumball you're going to get. With that said, I think it is a line for the ages that will go down in history to say, I revere this office, but I love my country more.
Oh, that's good.
And that is a line that Donald Trump will never speak. And I think that leaving on that note to say, hey, I'm not happy. In a way, Tim, I'm happy that he didn't come out and say, you know what? You're right. I'm old. I'm infirm. I don't know. You know, instead, he said, look, I think I could have done this. But for the sake of unifying my party and saving my country, even though I think I'm being wronged here, because he made that implication, right? To say, I get it. We can't beat Donald Trump with me, even though I think, you know, I can do it. My party doesn't think so. People in the country don't think so. And the most important thing is saving this country. That's the part I really admired him for doing and for stepping aside and not finger wagging or saying we need an open convention and, you know, blah, blah, blah. He did the right thing. And I think he did it the right way. I will agree with you that he did it 3 weeks too late after a very bad process.
Maybe even longer, but yeah.
You know, but I think that line, you know, I think when they do the Joseph Biden presidential library, there aren't that many quotes. He was not a great orator, but that quote should be carved in the wall of the Biden library. I revere this office, but I love my country more.
That is a dignified place for us to end. We were going to do a victory laugh about how right we were about all this, but why do that? When we can have a dignified end like that, why not just leave it there, right, Tom? People know we were right.
No. No,
that's not the kind of guy to say. Okay, go ahead.
I wasn't the kind of guy to. No, I'm totally the kind of guy to say I told you so. And so are you. Let's not bullshit around about this.
Okay.
I mean, we took a lot, and I didn't even call for him to step down. The range of positions out there were Biden should resign immediately. My own magazine had a piece that said that. We did have Stuart Stevens saying leave Joe alone, right?
Yeah.
And we had a lot of stuff in between. My position was we need to acknowledge there's a problem and have a real discussion about what to do next, because I don't think he's going to make it through this campaign. And I purposely wouldn't take debate about whether it should be Kamala or Pete or Gavin Newsom or whatever. I said, look, you've got to get out of respect for the man. Everybody needs to get him to the point of saying, maybe I can't do this. And we were right, you know, to say that this could not get worse and could even get better. And I think what nobody expected, including you, let's face it, and me, we didn't expect it to be as smooth a rollout. I mean, for, you know, knock on wood, first 2 weeks, it's been a remarkably smooth transition to a Harris campaign.
Sure.
And so, yeah, I think the people that called us secret Trumpers and chaos agents and just looking for, you know, clicks and
Rifters.
Anybody yeah. wants to send that apology to either one of us, you know where to find us on social media. So feel free to send your regrets on that.
I just want the record to show I was going to take us out on a dignified high note, and in the spirit of stoicism and manly virtues, I will let Tom have the last word on that. Thank you, Tom Nichols. I hope to see you again soon.
Thanks, Tim.
We'll be back tomorrow. There might be a Trump family member on this podcast. We'll see how that goes. See y'all then. Peace.
Lay here with the advertising slide past my eyes, like cartoons from other people's lives. I start to wonder what it takes to be a man.
Borg Podcast is produced by Katie Cooper with audio engineering and editing by Jason Brown.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at IPVanish.com/audio.